Siren Radio.
So now you know, and with it being the third Wednesday of the month, then quite simply, all we need to say is...
Inspired on air, originated by Sarah Bullimore, named by Julie Ellaby, and with added Amelia Chambers, Michael Blackburn, and Alex Levchuk, taking the world of regional arts entertainment into a whole new dimension.
And astoundingly, three-fifths of that particular lineup are actually in the studio at present. Whoa, Julie Ellaby, welcome back.
Thank you very much.
Michael Blackburn, welcome back.
It's nice to be back.
Excellent. And arguably, Amelia, of course, who adds her added chamberness in all sorts of ways, has her own programme now with Royal Radio. But I'm sure, you know, I didn't say I was going to mention the new Theatre Royal Lincoln, but I have. Anyway, what's on at Lincoln? Well, the Lincoln Book Festival is going to be the main feature, the main theme of this particular production, but it's time to eat, drink and be merry this pop-out with our pop-up festival garden. The words of the What's On Pop-Out Festival 2018. Julie Ellaby, please share with us what's happening with this grand event.
Okay, so as you know, we host a pop-out festival this time every year, and each year it's grown, and this time we've got a three-week kind of sudden downpour of different activities that are happening outside of our building. So Pop Out is about celebrating art outside of the ordinary. We have Payne's Plough's Roundabout, so that's their travelling theatre in the round in this huge beautiful dome that's going to be landing outside of our venue on our lawn, and that's going to be hosting their three touring shows along with some other professional productions and community pieces as well. We're kicking off Pop Out Festival with a circus weekend. So this is on the 29th and 30th of September, and it's completely free, and you just have to happen to be in town at the time when it's going on. So we have two different shows, one on Saturday, which is Urban Astronaut, and you see an astronaut figure moving in promenade down the high street, and he meets with another dancer at Cornhill. And on Sunday, you have this giant Jenga-like structure, which is built, leapt from, tumbled with by this troupe of circus contemporary dance performers.
Hey, Michael, that sounds as though it's just made for creative writers around the world, really.
I'm just looking at the massive photo of the massive Jenga, which is pretty astounding.
It's pretty astounding.
I was actually struck as well, urban soundings. Hmm. Old and new collide in an urban reimagining of sound, music and space, filling a floor of Lincoln Central Car Park.
Ah, yes.
And
so
the,
this
the
is
music,
new.
Medieval plain chant to ambient electronica. That sounds really far out, man.
I mean, do come along to it. It's going to be a bit of a buzz around it already. So this is in Lincoln's newest multi-storey car park, and we're just taking over one of the floors of it and having this unusual kind of music event. And again, it's very much about our pop-out brand, this idea of taking art and putting it in unexpected places.
Sounds pretty awesome. If I said the words, what the ladybird heard... 10 minutes to bed, little unicorn. The very hungry caterpillar, dear zoo, that's not my giraffe. Oi, cat, the tiger who came to tea. Where's the unicorn? The ugly five and Pepper's magical unicorn. Am I in any way, shape or form, Julie, beginning to open up some of your reading literature with your Ellaby-esque family?
As you were listing those, I was ticking them off. I have almost all of those, and the ones I don't have, I've had from other sources. So.
Well, they are the current top 10 best-selling preschool and picture books. In addition to that, Little Monkey is being distributed this particular September to 700,000 lucky souls to actually get children excited about reading.
Oh, that's wonderful.
We're going to find out a little bit more about that with Emma Kenny, developmental psychologist and commentator and director at Book Trust, Gemma Malley, tying in, of course, with the Lincoln Book Festival, and more after Sir Paul McCartney.
I sat around all day. I used to get stoned. I like to get wasted. But these days I don't. I'm happy with you. I got lots of good things to do. Oh yeah. I walked around angry. I used to feel bad, but nowadays my day don't have to be sad, 'cause I'm happy with you. I got lots of good things to do. Sing, walk a bluebell carpet, watch the children playing games, catch a moon and drop it, hear the gentle mantra roll on a frosty morning, see the mighty ocean break like a sailor's warning.
That nursery rhymes such as Ring Around a Roses and indeed Humpty Dumpty have got fairly graphic descriptions behind them in terms of the historical events that they actually were alluding to. And maybe in the 21st century, this is a way in which fairy tales can actually be used to tackle fake news and issues relating to that, with the news that Book Trust, the UK's largest children's reading charity, has actually been working with that ace developmental psychologist Emma Kenny to actually start recognising the books that illustrated the roles that illustrated books indeed play in enabling children to figure out fact from fiction. As we mentioned, the awesome developmental psychologist Emma Kenny is with us on this particular one. How are you, Emma?
I'm very well, thanks for having me.
Excellent. And the equally awesome director at Book Trust, that would be Gemma Malley. How are you, Gemma?
I'm very well, thank you.
Gemma, if we can come to you first from this particular side of things, this has got to be good news from the point of view of anybody who's keen to ensure that the power of the imagination and the time to read is actually developed, but also sifts the wheat from the chaff when it comes to what is appropriate news and what is improper news.
Definitely. I think what we really know is that when children are looking at images in picture books, they're often really, really cleverly done, so that a young child might be following the story and then they notice something that's not quite right. You know, a fox appears in the background, something that sparks their imagination. And what it does is just get them thinking creatively, and it also makes them understand that there are different layers. So as they get older, they can actually read between the lines, think for themselves, and understand when something is straightforward and when something's a bit nuanced and when they really need to dig a little bit deeper.
Emma, from your own perspective, this is something which, again, is a wonderful way of enhancing our own inbuilt bovine stuff detectors of actually knowing that that's not quite right.
Yeah, I think one of the things that we often need to inform children about is their instinct.
because it's something we don't necessarily talk about in schools. And the great thing about reading, and particularly reading with children as well, because I think the Book Trust is very much about that kind of globalised understanding of the importance of just sharing time with children, whether that's in education or at home, you know, just actually sitting and being with your child and engaging in that way. But helping them to formulate that kind of association that they make with the stories, and to also articulate that their individual experiences will actually differ from another person's individual experience when going through those processes. I think these days we are aware that there is so much negativity out there, there is so much negative information being construed as fact, that the earlier that you can get children to really decipher that just because something says it is doesn't necessarily mean it is, that's something that's wholly developmentally important. So the Book Trust isn't just about trying to get you to think about reading on the purely developmental level, which is obviously so important. So much research out there. I can't express to anybody listening to this, there is so much research about the impact that reading with your children has on their development. It's really important to encourage it. But more than that, it's about helping children to understand that there is always a deeper meaning, and finding that deeper meaning, whatever it means for them, is something that's really important.
And this is something, of course, which Native Americans and shaman and could actually say, well, this is nothing new. This is something we've known for centuries. Maybe it's something we're kind of relearning in the 21st century technology world that we live in.
I think that's right. But I think we have to keep reminding families how important it is, because we are busy. I'm busy. I'm sure you're busy. And making that time to just sit down with your child, and not in a really stressed way. I think that the other thing, you know, the campaign we're launching at the moment, Time to Read, it's giving every reception age child a really fantastic book called Little Monkey by Marta Altes. And the idea is to get families to read this book together and enjoy it. You know, when children are 5, 6, 7, this is when they're learning to read. And it's so easy for reading to suddenly become that chore at the end of the day that everyone has to get done. And it goes from something wonderful and magical and fun to something that's really hard for children, for parents, for carers, for everyone. And so just carving out that 5-10 minutes at the end of the day to sit, cuddle, share a book, look at the pictures and laugh and giggle and all of those things, that's really what we're trying to do today.
I was intrigued in terms of the top 10 best-selling preschool and picture books. A lot of anthropomorphisation in there, to use a huge word. Ladybirds, unicorns, caterpillars, and of course Peppa Pig is in at number one with Peppa's Magical Unicorn.
I think it's very easy for authors to write about characters who are animals, and for children to read about animals. They can do more challenging things or experience more challenging things without it feeling too close to home. So it's a bit like when children get older and we get these sort of sci-fi dystopian books. It enables the authors and children to look at really quite challenging things, but in a separate world that's not theirs. And it helps them understand their place in the world. Also, we all just love pigs and crocodiles and unicorns, and I'm a great fan of The Hungry Caterpillar.
Absolutely.
It's fun.
And indeed, we could talk for hours about science fiction as allegory, science fiction as metaphor, and so on. Emma, when we started this off by saying this is a way in which people can be developed and appreciate the notion of what is fake, what is not true, and so on and so forth. And we talked about back in the day of nursery rhymes and so on. Is this a kind of similar 21st century time of actually, it's a way of actually dealing with life issues, but in a way which actually is safe, which is appropriate, which actually makes perfect sense?
One of the things in therapy and parenting work that I constantly preach to parents is that there are such a range now of books that can help your children understand a range of issues. So even if you've got a child who's dealing with parents who've got mental health issues, there are books out there, or dealing with grief, there are books out there, usually with animals in them, so that they can kind of have that sidestep experience emotionally. But the point is that the fact that they're sitting down and exploring an emotional world, because it's different than screen time. I'm not going to be negative about screens. You know, I'm sure there's lots of fantastic things about sitting in front of those kind of things and watching TV, etc. However, what I can tell you, and I can tell you this because research is absolutely clear, if your child is reading with you, ideally, because on a mindfulness level, that connection and just having that space and time is really important, but actually spending time creatively, imaginatively thinking, listening, listening, hearing. These are qualities that when you actually extrapolate in life are absolutely essential to becoming successful adults. Being able to emotionally consider, being able to imaginatively process a world that you can't see apart from those pictures you have to bring to life in your mind. Those imagination traits are things that we know have a huge weight and emphasis as children grow through their lives into young adults, because that's what we're doing. We're creating, really, the future adults. And when we can do that where they're emotionally balanced and they feel adjusted and they know how to express themselves emotionally, that comes from words. The power of words is just so far-reaching. And I think that in this modern world, we can lose, as you were saying, those initial things that we've kind of had embedded in our history, which is the fact that throughout the ages, the one thing that has considered, you know, continued is words, is the fact that the written context has remained because it's so powerful. So anybody who wants to kind of think about how to promote their experience with their children, you know, look on the Buttrust site, because obviously there's lots of information there. Do read with your children and do try to create that beautiful bedroom routine where you just have that shared space. It's so important.
Well, I'm already staggered that although we have Michael Morpurgo coming up for the Lincoln Book Festival, I can't see any sign of Little Monkey there, which is outrageous, so I'm going to have to get this sorted.
It's an absolutely gorgeous book. Anybody who's got a child who wants to kind of start navigating that process, it's a beautiful book. I mean, obviously some kids are going to be lucky enough to come home with it, but I really would strongly recommend it because it's got such a little message in there that every child will indicate and experience differently. But if you do want to know things, obviously booktrust.org.uk is the place to go, so please do check that out. It's a great charity.
As we always knew, Emma, consummate professionals right the way through, including giving the name checks there in terms of where to actually go on, always on message. Genius as ever. Gemma Malley, Director at Book Trust and a developmental psychologist extraordinaire, Emma Kenny, many thanks indeed. Take care.
Thanks
now.
Thanks for having
Thank
us. Bye bye.
Julie Ellaby, you were saying that actually it's not a chore, it's a joy. It's one of the delights to actually read with your child.
It is the best part of the day. It's our favourite bit of the day. When everything is hectic from the moment you wake up until the bedtime routine starts. But when you sit down with a book with your family together, that's when you suddenly are a family and you're just all combined, and it's gorgeous. It's the best bit. Yeah, it's never been a chore for me.
Michael, would you endorse that?
It's certainly not quite as much, but yes. You see what I mean? Yes.
Personally, I'd like to see the LB family sit down and read The Private Lives of Monarchs, or indeed The Private Lives of the Tudors, both fantastic books written by the equally awesome and fantastic Tracy Borman. Tracy, welcome to the programme. How are you?
I'm very well. That's a lovely introduction, thank you.
Well, how do we actually move from Pepper's Magical Unicorn to The Private Lives of the Tudors and Gunpowder and so on? And I thought, well, let's bridge it. What the heck? Now, Tracy, we're delighted in Lincoln to be able to welcome you back again to the city, which is literally just 46 miles south of where you got your first degree at the University of Hull. Marvellous.
It is, and I am born and bred in Lincoln, so I am a Lincolnshire girl, so it's always a particular pleasure to be coming back to the home city.
And who better than to actually be on Inspired On Air, which is a programme on a monthly basis that regularly looks to promote the best in the arts and the creatives and all sorts of things. And of course the Lincoln Book Festival, which is literally just days away.
I know, it's coming around very quickly now. My daughter and I are counting it in sleeps, in fact. I think my event is 9 sleeps away, something like that. So yeah, very soon now. I'm really looking forward to it.
The 29th of September, so a quick calculation. That's pretty much 9 sleeps to work through.
Have
that.
Have I got that right? Somebody's going to phone in now and say...
There might be a couple of other sort of challenges that's actually there. Anyway, Gunpowder, Treason and Plot. So, and it also ties in this grand Guy Fawkes scenario, which, of course, the BBC did an interesting series of dramatisation earlier in the year, with, of course, its possible roots in Lincolnshire. Could you tease ahead, Tracy?
Well, indeed. There are known links in a couple of Lincolnshire houses to the Gunpowder plotters, and I will certainly be referencing those in my talk. But, yeah, I mean, this is such a dramatic time in our history. We're so obsessed with the Tudors, and I am. I'm a Tudor historian. But if you look just beyond them to the Stuarts and that beginning of the Stuart period, it was one of incredible drama. So you literally couldn't make it up. You've got this despised king, James I, who upsets pretty much everyone. And soon there are plots and rebellions forming about him. And that was the inspiration for my novel. And in particular, as you mentioned, the Gunpowder plot, probably the most notorious terror plot in history.
The novel, of course, is The King's Witch. Not The King's Switch, The King's Witch. Because otherwise we'll be talking into all sorts of potential historical gender realignments and so on. Religious tensions, the fatal outcome of one of the most infamous failed acts of revolution in British history, of course. And it's the first in a trilogy of historical novels.
It is indeed, all following the same heroine, Frances Gorges, who was a real woman. You wouldn't make up a name like that. And she was the daughter of one of Elizabeth I's favourite ladies-in-waiting. And so I based my heroine on a real person. But the joy is that we know practically nothing about her. So that's why my imagination could put her in places that I wanted her to be and really explore her character. And it's called The King's Witch because Frances finds herself on the wrong end of a witch hunt, James I being rather obsessed with the existence of witches and the need to eradicate them from the world. So it's a world of turbulence and danger and ultimately, yes, rebellion.
A world of turbulence and danger. It's almost like describing post-Brexit times. No, we won't go there. too horrendous to contemplate. A matter of 800, 200 days to go, whatever. Michael, thoughts and questions from yourself.
Yeah, what was the initial thing that got you thinking about historical fiction as opposed to other types of fiction?
Mm. Yeah, well, I think because I'm a historian, it really did seem like a natural.
I mean, far from the obvious thing.
but also, I am a huge fan of historical fiction, so I read it all the time. But my inspiration for this particular book, apart from just a fascinating period, was Lincoln, I'm happy to say, because I wrote a non-fiction book about the witches of Beaver Castle, who were tried at Lincoln Castle in the early 17th century. And so that was non-fiction, and it really just started something off for me. I just thought, this is such fascinating material, I'd love to dramatize it. So the novel isn't about those witches, but it's definitely about that theme and the kind of the danger and the terror that surrounded early 17th century Britain.
Mm. Julie.
Oh, I don't know what to ask, to be honest, because it's a genre that I haven't explored before, but very recently I started taking an interest in it. So this is fascinating to listen to. And I quite like the idea of kind of dipping my toe into reading the historical fiction, but also getting my head around the historical facts as well to kind of see where the two align and where you've kind of gone off on your kind of imaginative tangent. So what would you recommend as a good starting point for somebody like me?
Yes, what's the gateway entry point to the Tracy Borman oeuvre?
Which of my books
yes,
would you recommend?
Where should she start?
Oh, gosh, where to start? I would say, you mentioned the private lives of the Tudors, because the Tudors, obviously, they're, it's a well-known dynasty, but my book looks at them behind closed doors and what they were really like. So you see them at their most vulnerable. It's, I have to say, not often a pretty sight. And there's all sorts of things. It's really like Horrible Histories for Grown-Ups, and that's not to do it down in any way. I'm a huge Horrible Histories fan. But I just think it gives you a different view, and I think that's what I've enjoyed about fiction, in that you can get under the skin of these famous people. That's really what's always fascinated me, both as a novelist but as a historian too. What were the people really like? Not just the dates and events and all the rest of it.
You're Chief Executive of the Heritage Education Trust, Joint Chief Curator to the Historic Royal Palaces, General Contributor to BBC History, TV Radio. I mean, how do you fit it all in terms
of...
It's
utter chaos. I'd like to say it's all well managed, but of course everything gets busy at the same time. It's an absolute joy because Lincoln inspired my choice of career. My very first job in Heritage was dressing up as a Victorian jailer and showing people around the prison chapel in Lincoln Castle. So it all started there too many years ago to mention, and it's gone from there, really. So I feel very lucky, even though I often feel under huge pressure to get all the various things done. It's still all history. So, you know, how bad can it be?
Well, exactly. I know Ian Richards was very excited when the contracts were signed, sealed and delivered, and the fact that you're coming back to Lincoln, which is great stuff from that perspective. TracyBorman.co.uk is a fabulous website to go to find out details. You can always find out a whole range of aspects from that perspective. Got to ask you as well, Tracy, you mentioned obviously you have a young child, young family from that perspective. Do they follow the delights of What the Lady Bird Heard, 10 Minutes to Bed, Little Unicorn, The Very Hungry Caterpillar, Dear Zoo, or That's Not My Giraffe?
They certainly did. Well, she did. She's now almost nine, so she's now into David Walliams and that sort of genre. And as I say, both she and I share a passion for horrible histories. But she was a big fan of The Very Hungry Caterpillar. What the Lady Bird Heard was another big favourite. And I completely agree. I mean, you were saying earlier about the importance of reading, and bedtime story is both of our favourite time now of the day, and not just because I'm putting her to bed, so I'll get a bit of peace and quiet. It's just a lovely time to come together and just do something very calm and explore these stories together.
It's a mere £10 to see Tracy Borman on the 29th of September. That is, I mean, I thought there's a decimal point missing here. It should surely be £100. So Saturday the 29th of September, 6:15 p.m. at the Lincoln Drill Hall. If you're listening outside the region, you're listening on podcast, etc., you fancy coming to visit the university, it's an open day then as well. So you can see the University of Lincoln open day and then catch Gunpowder, Treason and Plot at the Lincoln Drill Hall. Make a full experience of the whole thing Saturday, 29th of September. Genuinely awesome. Tracy, I've also got to ask you a little mini question here, which you may sort of think, oh, that's interesting. Given that Richard III, buried, of course, in Leicester, and sort of through, there's still, every so often, there are apologists for Richard who come around and say, if he'd actually, you know, if he hadn't been a victim of all that Shakespearean propaganda, we would never have actually had any Brexit in the first place. He would have stayed with Europe, it would have been all fine, etc. You know, he would have forgotten about all the princes and so on and so forth. Any thoughts on that? Is it just a case of, well, history always rewrites itself?
I think history does. I think I was asked to write a piece for a major newspaper about was Henry VIII to blame for Brexit, basically. And I think of all the historical characters, it's probably Henry who is most to blame. He sort of separated us from large parts of Europe. But it does prove that just there's nothing new under the sun. These issues come back time and again. And there were severe misgivings about making us this kind of separate island in the 16th century, just as there is today.
Yeah. Michael, of course, obviously sort of taking one particular line that, Julian, it's a strange that we'll just have to keep on going and hopefully learn the lessons of history, which is the end of the day, Santiana. Don't repeat those lessons, or we fail to learn, repeat them. Tracy, it's been fabulous touching base with your good self. Hopefully we might even catch up with you on the 29th of September. Will you be kind enough to join us again in the near future?
I'd love to, and I hope to see you then.
There's a little black spot on the sun today. It's the same old thing as yesterday. There's a black hat caught in a high treetop. There's a flagpole rack and the wind won't stop. I have stood here before inside the pouring rain with the world turning circles running round my brain. I guess I'm always hoping that you'll end this rain, but it's my destiny to be the king of pain. There's a little black spot.
approaching Monday the 24th of September. So what is news about that, you may well ask? Monday the 24th of September, it's the launch of the Lincoln Book Festival 2018. It's going to be a revolution, isn't it, Ian Richards?
It is, yeah. We've got our theme for this year's Lincoln Book Festival is revolution. So we're celebrating the centenary of women in Britain winning the right to vote.
And already some of the delights on the festival programme look, quite frankly, awesome. An evening with Sir Michael Morpurgo on Wednesday, 26th of September. Clearly one of those flagpole events from that point of view. And a whole host of other scenarios, including Tracy Borman, Marcus Chown, Sally Nichols and more.
Yeah, I mean, we're very pleased with the lineup. This is actually Lincoln Book Festival's 15th year. We've got a real track record of delivering a great programme of awesome events. So we're very pleased with some of those big headline events. And as you picked out, clearly Michael Morpurgo is going to be very, very popular. Tickets are selling extremely well at the Drill Hall, great venue. So we hope to see hundreds of people there enjoying that event, because it's going to be a real highlight.
Very much so. Now, let's go back to the festival launch, because special guest award-winning writer Sally Nichols will actually be there.
Yeah, Sally's the book that sort of connects Sally's work to the festival theme of revolution is very much the centenary of the Representation of the People Act, which gave some British women the right to vote. I think lots of people will have been engaged in different ways with that centenary campaign, big national campaign, and Houses of Parliament and the Fawcett Society, lots of other organisations involved, including the University of Lincoln, which I represent. And Sally is a young adult fiction author.
Things a Bright Girl Can Do.
Yes, that's right.
Become Vice-Chancellor of the University of Lincoln. Mary Stewart, I had to nod it in there.
Yeah. Things a Bright Girl Can Do, yeah, is one great deal of critical acclaim and been a real commercial success as well. And Sally's going to be talking about creative writing and providing some inspiration for young writers to follow in her footsteps, hopefully.
Reading, writing, inspiration, imagination. Yes. Now, we've held this back slightly because we teased it ahead, I think, back in July when it was actually launched. But the opening evening, of course, will also see the announcement of the winners of the 2018 Flash Fiction competition.
Yes, that's right. So Flash Fiction, for people who don't know, is I describe it as an ultra short story. So
50 words.
Is 50 words
gone.
On the dot. So
we've already done six entries in this interview alone.
Yeah, if you submit 49 words, your story isn't eligible. So you have to hit 50 words on the dot, which for people who write as a hobby or for a living know hitting a word count is a real challenge. And hitting a word count creatively in a way that tells a story is a real challenge. But we held our inaugural Flash Fiction competition last year. We had a huge number of entries, hundreds of entries from schools all around Lincolnshire and the East Midlands and even further afield. We've had a similar response this year, so we're delighted at the response, and we expect we'll have some real high-quality entries as well. The judges are just going through those right now.
I was going to say, have you actually had any sneak previews as yet? Any?
I make sure that I don't get those sneak previews. So we appoint a shortlisting panel, and then that they will refer that some of their selection to a judging panel, and which includes Sally, and the winners will be announced on the evening, and each of the winners will win £30 in book vouchers, and of course the glory of having won the Book Festival's Flash Fiction competition for their age group.
Same evening, our first story also going to be launching a new Wordsmith poetry competition to find a new Lincolnshire laureate.
That's right. I mean, First Story has been a partner of the festival for a couple of years now. Lincolnshire branch of First Story actually launched at the festival a couple of years ago. Now, First Story is a national charity that does some absolutely brilliant work in schools, particularly in areas where educational attainment perhaps is not as high as it might be, and also in disadvantaged areas and disadvantaged schools. And what they do is they bring in high-profile writers to work with children and really develop those writing skills, and I think just as importantly to inspire children of all ages to realise that creativity and writing is something that anybody can do. So we're really proud to be working with First Story. And this launch of their new competition is to find what we were calling the Lincolnshire Laureate. Of course, Lincolnshire has a great heritage of poetry, and this is a poetry competition. Oh. So maybe there's a young Tennyson out there somewhere.
I was going to say the Alfred Tennyson building.
Waiting to be unearthed, yeah.
Precisely. It'll definitely happen. Now, some might say, Sally Nicholls, announcement of the winners of the 2018 Flash Fiction Competition, and the launch of First Story, that's got to be at least £45, £50 a ticket. It's free!
It is.
Completely free. Yes. Launch date, completely free.
I mean, that's really important for the festival, is that it's accessible, and we're really keen that audiences of all interests and ages and backgrounds can come along. So we've got a mixture of some free events. The launch party should be a great occasion, as you say. That's free to attend. On the Saturday, which is the 29th, we have our local history morning, which again is free to attend. And that brings together lots of the Lincolnshire heritage groups. So the Society for Lincolnshire History and Archaeology, the Survey of Lincoln. And it's a real sort of celebration of the richness of Lincolnshire's history and heritage. And again, that's free to attend. We have some workshops as well during the week, which are free to attend. And so really, it's the author events, the big-ticketed events, the Michael Moore Pergo and Tracy Borman, where we do have a ticket price, and we try and keep those as reasonable as possible so that lots of people can enjoy those events.
Well, earlier in the year, we spoke to music journalist John Robb with his History of Punk, and together with Oxford historian Dr. Mark Mulholland, they'll be exploring different expressions of anarchy in the UK with Anarchy! Exclamation mark on the 28th of September. Those again that you can actually look at by going to the lincolnbookfestival.org website to actually detail various other bits and pieces, presumably also around on most social media as well.
It is, yeah. We have very active social media accounts. We have Facebook and Twitter. So if you look, I think we're at Link Bookfest on Twitter, and we post lots of updates on there, as you would expect. And during the festival as well, we'll be looking out for that sort of engagement on social media from people who are coming along to those events and enjoying them, and publishing interviews with some of our guest authors and the like.
And as we mentioned, clearly the theme of revolution and emancipation and so on, Sisters of the Revolution, so big they had to do it in two parts. Part one on the 27th of September and part two also on the 27th of December. So we got before 1914, then after 1914, Professor Maggie Armstrong, Dr. Janice Lomas and Jane Robinson, three of the fine folk will be coordinating that. Although I have to say, I do have a little liking for Michael Morpurgo's apparent description here of himself, right? Sitting up in bed and he likes listening to Mozart and eating prawns. Well, it's a different line from that
it
point
is,
of view.
Yeah.
What are you most looking forward to yourself, Ian? Don't say the end. Don't say 2019, because obviously it'll be around before we know it.
Do you know, I'm looking forward to Tracy Borman on the Saturday. Tracy is, as people might well know, she is Joint Chief Curator of Historic Royal Palaces, which looks after the Tower of London and Kew Gardens and these great heritage sites. But for Lincoln Book Festival, she's a Lincolnshire girl, and she very much sees her appearance at Lincoln Book Festival as a bit of a homecoming. She'll be at the Drill Hall on the Saturday, and she'll be talking about her debut novel. So Tracy's written many books about kind of royal lineages. But this is her debut novel. It's the first in a trilogy, and it's set around the gunpowder plot. So Guy Fawkes and all that. And Tracy is...
originates in Lincolnshire, I believe.
Introduced a new heroine, and I think it would be very interesting to see what Tracy's thoughts are on making that step from writing history books to writing historical fiction.
I think Phil Hanlon-Williams was particularly keen on that. From my own personal point of view, I'm going to actually throw in something completely different and say that I'm particularly looking forward to the 25th of September and a rationale for why gravity, a force that keeps us on our feet on the ground, holds the key to understanding time and the origin of the universe. And many of these programmes we try to do exactly the same, but I suspect that Marcus Chone, ace writer who will be developing the whole range of things there, will be delighted to talk about that, as well as a whole heap of other fine folk, including Reginald D. Hunter and Andy Hamilton. Oh, they won't be there, but they were presenting with Marcus Chone from that sort of point of view. So that's a line from that. And we see we also have a wonderful writer and broadcaster, Rebecca, who's with us.
Rebecca Fraser.
Thank you.
Yeah,
Rebecca. See, I knew you were. You were ahead of me there. Sorted through that, Rebecca Fraser.
So, I think that's the Tuesday, going from memory, what we're calling Explosive New Worlds.
Yeah.
So we have, a real sort of mixed kind of double header, really, of author events. So we have
Marcus Cho and Rebecca Fraser.
Yeah.
Not to be confused with Marcus Fraser and Rebecca Cho. Who knows what could happen?
Yeah.
Fantastic. We'll get various interviews as well as the whole thing proceeds. You've been listening to Ian Richards. Ian, your official title within the festival? I mean, because obviously...
I'm a volunteer member of the organising committee. So I work very closely with Phil Hamden-Williams, who's the festival chair, and the other trustees to help put the programme together. And the entire festival, it's important to say, is run entirely by volunteers. There are no paid staff who put the programme together. We rely very heavily on support from sponsors, which includes the university and lots of other notable organisations around the city. And this year we've been very, very lucky to win some grant funding from Arts Council England through the National Lottery, which has helped us to do some exciting things, not least to redevelop our website. So I know you gave the URL earlier on, but if anyone wants to have a look,
LincolnBookFestival.org.
Yeah, that's right.
Quite clearly. It is the events taking place between the 22nd of September and the 29th of September, 7 days of absolute joy. It just actually came out a few weeks ago of the Steampunk Festival. I was delivering an academic paper on H.G. Wells and Jules Verne, obviously to Explosive New Worlds and more with respect to Lincolnshire Book Festival. The Lincoln Book Festival. It's for Lincolnshire, but it's the Lincoln Book Festival. Let's get our branding right. It's going to be awesome. Ian, thank you for taking part in the production today. And more to come, I'm sure. Yes, absolutely. Me and Richard's going off there to sort out all manner of wonderful things. Probably about to lie down in a darkened room with literally just days to go. Not many sleeps till the book festival launches, Julie.
We're almost there.
There you go. Step inside, take a seat, but don't get comfortable. It's like a ghost train that takes takes place inside your own brain, according to the stage. The Guardian, a creepy and manipulative miniature which unsettles and makes you question not just your senses, but what you actually believe. To what am I referring?
This is about Seance. So Seance is one of the jewels in the crown of our pop-out festival offering this season. And it's going to be taking place in a freight container outside of our venue on the lawn. That's outside Lincoln Performing Arts Centre. Should I start by saying who probably shouldn't come and see it?
People of a nervous disposition?
Pretty much. It's not recommended to those who are claustrophobic, pregnant, suffer from back or heart conditions. And that does give you a little bit of a flavour of what to expect. So you go into this freight container and it's a theatrical experience. I want to really stress that it is theatre. This is entertainment. And
It's only a play.
But no one's looking to hoodwink with any kind of serious take on what a seance is. But it's very much playing with the idea of seance, but it's also about deprivation of the senses. So you're going to this completely pitch black environment. You've got headphones on. You're sat around a table with other audience members. And it only lasts for about kind of 15, 20 minutes. So it's quite short, but it is quite an experience, quite an impact.
Almost sold it to me. Moving on, we actually have a connection with Doctor Who and the pop-up festival because of an awesome writer called Vinay Patel, who is actually commissioned to write an episode for Series 11 of Doctor Who, which, of course, is the one with Jodie Whittaker, which screens in the autumn of this very year. That's Vinay Patel, as we mentioned, BAFTA Breakthrough Brit, a winning theatre and screenwriter. And he's connected with, or has written, Styx and Stones.
That's right. So Styx and Stones is one of the three professional contemporary theatre productions that are being brought to Payne's Plough's Roundabout Theatre on their kind of rep tour this season. I feel like this is going to be like a really big hitter for quite young people, quite trendy people. It's very topical. It's like a quick-witted satire looking at the notion of prejudice and also what happens when things kind of snowball and get out of control a little bit. And it kind of explores all of that.
Sharp as a tack satire, according to The Times, who, together with the Edinburgh Festivals magazine, the British Theatre Guide, A Younger Theatre, Broadway Baby and 3 Weeks, all gave 4-star ratings. So it's going to be a fantastic production. And in an interview with The Guardian, Vinay Patel actually said it's about how we talk to each other about what is offensive or not. Okay, as in, of course, the line, sticks and stones may break our bones, but words may never hurt us. We've just literally covered a smidgen of some of the key things that are actually there. What other highlights would you like to promote from this fantastic production, which is the Pop-Up Festival 2018, Lincoln's Micro Festival of Art Outside the Ordinary?
What we haven't mentioned yet is probably the offering for families. So we have got How to Spot an Alien, which is one of the three shows brought by Payne's Plough.
Just visit the Siren Radio Studios.
Didn't want to mention the antennae. Yeah. So it's a How to Spot an Alien. It's actually taking place on our Fun Palace Day. And everything that's part of Fun Palace is free, and therefore we cannot charge tickets for How to Spot an Alien. So if you book your tickets and come along to that as a family, you're guaranteed a top quality professional theatre experience for absolutely no money. It's a no-brainer, really. I'll be bringing my family along, that's for sure.
126,000 people last year. 126,000 people.
That's pretty huge, isn't it?
That's a Fun Palace across the UK and beyond.
That's right.
That's not going to all be descending on Lincoln.
Fun Palace?
I think so.
Okay, so Fun Palace is this wonderful sort of grassroots community initiative, and it does take place all over the country. And we're really fortunate that Lincoln Performing Arts Centre plays host to Lincoln's Fun Palace. And it's something that we work with the local community to present. So we help to kind of curate and program different events, and it's really accessible and really fun, and it's about a merging and celebration of science and the arts together.
Bit like Lincoln Lights, of course, which comes up in June next year.
In fact, we have coordinated with Lincoln Lights in the past, just with the way that the dates have fallen. So,
exactly.
Yeah.
If you're looking for Lincoln Lights, then you can get hold of Technology and Science. I believe the date is June the 29th.
Mm-hmm.
2019. In addition to that, of course, you can also find out some of the things we've been talking about by going to lpac.co.uk. See what I did there? lpac.co.uk. I didn't mention...
I didn't say the...
there we are. We're going to find out a few final thoughts with respect to gig theatre, One Life Stand, booking, all of the other sort of elements that are actually there. We've already talked about seances, we've talked about Sticks and Stones, we've talked about Fun Palace and so on and so forth. But it's time for a teeny musical break now, which will bring us neatly round to the concluding part of the September Inspired on Air. It's Duran Duran, a band who are still going strong as well. Back in the day, as they were probably before your time in the 1980s and 1990s.
I was alive.
Well, there you go.
Bye. the magic I'm feeding off your fingers.
In case you're wondering, seance, £5, all tickets, everything. Lots of other things happening as far as the Pop Out Festival is concerned. We've got October Evolutions, 100 different words for love. Sit with us for a moment. Island Town, Sticks and Stones, we've mentioned. How to Spot an Alien. Yay! Anything else, Julie, you'd like to just finally flag up in terms of how people can stay in touch with the Lincoln Performing Arts Centre?
So our What Song Guide for Pop Out Festival is out now, so you can pop in and pick it up if you haven't already received a copy through your door. You can keep in touch with us through all of our social media platforms, of which there are many and varied, and we are easy to find, Lincoln Performing Arts Centre.
And on a programme which has featured the return of Michael Blackburn and, of course, your good self, Julie Ellaby, and the wonderful Ian Richards, and Tracy Borman, and Emma Kenny, and Gemma Malley, what two words should we actually leave our listener with?
Be inspired.
Lying down ain't easy, and everyone is pleasing. I can't get no relief.